Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have with us Bill Goodwin, our investigations editor. Now, Bill, you were our first guest in 2020.
Gosh, pre-lockdown.
Pre-lockdown, yes. And you're our first guest in 2021 as well.
Perhaps this will become an annual event. Who knows?
And the story then had a Russian angle, the Travelex story, which you won't get into now. And this time you're back with another story with the Russian angle, and you've added in Trump as well.
And it's also about Darlington on Tees. And it's an excellent investigation by a brilliant journalist called Duncan Campbell, who spent many months researching this topic.
Yes, this is the tale of the Seth Rich conspiracy and the British angle on that. And we'll get to the detail of that during the podcast. Just to flag that the main article we're discussing is entitled Revealed, Brits Who Fueled Vicious Conspiracy Theory. And as Bill said just now, it's by Duncan Campbell. Could you just tell us a little bit about Duncan?
Duncan is a very, very famous journalist, and he probably shot to fame in the 70s. He was the first journalist to disclose the existence of GCHQ, which back in the 70s was an official secret.
His mother worked at Bletchley Park.
Indeed she did, yes.
A forerunner of GCHQ.
Absolutely. So that was in a magazine which no longer exists called Time Out, but it precipitated revenge from the intelligence services and the state at the time, who were apoplectic and subsequently monitored him, bugged his phones, etc. And later on he was arrested for speaking to a former member of, if I remember this rightly, Signals Intelligence, and was put on trial under the Official Secrets Act.
This was the famous ABC trial, wasn't it?
It was a huge course of ever at the time, one that rallied around the whole of journalism, because journalists everywhere were protesting about this. It involved a mysterious Colonel B, whose name was never meant to be publicly disclosed, but people from the NUJ were writing his name on beaches and placards and things, just as a form of protest. It was before my time.
Will is rummaging around for the listeners to find something.
Yeah, I'm rummaging around in my drawer, actually. I don't know why I'm showing you this, because you can't see it on a podcast. But I was lucky enough to go to an ABC case reunion, even though I had nothing to do with it. I sort of cake crushed it, and some of the original protest badges were available, and I picked up a few. Now I've got one here that says I'm a security risk, which obviously I wear with great pride. But that is not the only thing Duncan has famous for. He's written a few books, which are really very, very good and explosively revelatory. He's very famous again, Zircon Satellite Story. There's a whole series of programs called Secret Society, which the government of the day, I think it was Margaret Thatcher's government, was very opposed to, and some of them were never shown at the time. Mm-hmm. But the one that's particularly about cabinet office committees, the existence of cabinet office committees was deemed to be so sensitive that it couldn't possibly be shown on TV. So that one was never shown. Of course, now we know all about cabinet office committees. We know all about the Cobra Committee. It's no longer a secret, but back then it was. But the big one was the Zircon satellite, and the story exposed Britain's involvement in secretly funding a spy satellite that appeared over Asia, or was due to appear over Asia. And again, it was not about disclosing official secrets, but it was about disclosing how Parliament had been misled and how the government had not stuck to promises to disclose this sort of expenditure to Parliament. So it was politically embarrassing, but his house in Edinburgh and the TV studios were raided, and police arrived and confiscated the footage, and it became a huge, huge story back in the day.
He's a hugely distinguished investigative journalist. I know, Bill, you've worked with him on a number of things, both before and during your time at Computer Weekly as well. So today we've cleared the decks for Bill, as we did for the Julian Assange special podcast that we did before Christmas. So the rest of us can take it easy, I suppose, in a way. But Caroline, can I invite you to get the ball rolling with our little questions for Bill?
Well, I guess I was actually discussing this podcast with my sister just before we came on and started recording it, because she was like, oh, what are you talking about today? And I was like, oh, it's this really, really interesting story about an online disinformation campaign, which is geared towards covering up Russia's involvement in the outcome of the 2016 US presidential election campaign, which we all know resulted in Donald Trump becoming president. And she was like, oh, okay. I said, so yeah, I said, that's part of the story. I said, but also it involves this 41-year-old IT manager from Darlington in the northeast of England. And that all ties into the murder of this chap called Seth Rich. And she was just like, stop talking. Like, I'm just getting too confused. And I was like, okay, it's an absolutely wild ride, the story. I was like, you have to read it. I couldn't do it justice. This is a big story. It's really interesting. So many twists and turns. But why, Bill, is this a story that, you know, we're covering on Computer Weekly? Why should our readers care about it, I guess?
Well, we're interested in and many of our readers are interested in the subject of disinformation and how the internet and social media is used to propagate false news and false information. And it's, in terms of regulation, it's a huge topic at the moment. People are debating how to regulate Facebook, Twitter, what measures need to be taken in Europe, what measures need to be taken in the US, whether social media organizations can be trusted to police themselves and to police disinformation. And it's a huge, huge problem, because there are, you know, nation states are using social media very effectively as a political weapon. Information warfare is another form of warfare, and Russia particularly is using it very effectively. So they have a whole operation dedicated to spreading disinformation on the internet using social media. And it doesn't really matter what the subject matter is. So Russia doesn't particularly care. The Russian intelligence agency, the GRU, is subject agnostic. But it's anything that will cause discord, anything that will cause polarization, anything that will cause people to be angry, anything that will destabilize other countries. It includes things like, it has included things like Black Lives Matter. It's included things like lesbian, gay rights, and it's included, you know, the DNC hacks and the US election. Anything, elections in France also have been another target. So anything that creates discord and polarizes people and sets people up against each other is fair game. And it's enabled through technology. And how do you manage and control this? We haven't got to a proper answer yet.
Key figure in this, in that this IT manager, Tim Leonard. So who is he? And from the work you've been doing with Duncan on this story, what do you make of him?
Well, Duncan first wrote about Tim Leonard for Computer Weekly back in 2018. And the story then was really identifying who Tim Leonard was. So there was a character called, who used the pseudonym Adam Carter, who was spreading all sorts of conspiracy theories on the internet about Russia's involvement in hacking the US DNC during the 2016 elections. Now, who was Adam Carter? Who was this person that was putting forth all of these conspiracy theories and what you might fairly classify as disinformation out on the internet? And Duncan did a huge amount of forensic research. It took a very long time, and actually identified who this person, Adam Carter, was. And it turned out not to be a Trump supporter based in the US, as you might think, but an IT manager living in Darlington in the northeast of England, who's behind all of this. It took a very long time to prove because part of the investigation involved going to Canada, and Tim Leonard had claimed to his boss, his manager, that Adam Carter was really a former colleague of his who lived in Canada. And Duncan ended up having to ask a TV crew in Canada to go and interview this guy, Tim McLennan, and get him on film, saying he knew nothing about it and had no involvement in it. So that's how Tim Leonard came to be identified. And in correspondence with Computer Weekly, he eventually admitted that Adam Carter was in fact himself Tim Leonard. But he's played a big role in circulating many of the theories that are designed to discredit any Russian involvement in the hackings during the 2016 elections in the US.
And the choice of the pseudonym, this Adam Carter, wasn't just plucked out of the air, isn't it? That's kind of one of the kind of lighter moments in this story when you kind of follow that trail back.
Yeah, well, if you've ever seen Spooks, I can't say I've actually watched Spooks, but Adam Carter is one of the main characters in Spooks.
Mm.
Do you know anything about him, Brian?
But yeah, he's basically an MI5 officer.
Fact that they chose the name of one of the characters from a BBC 9 PM drama is just very, I don't know, it's just kind of fitting in a way. I quite like that detail.
This part of the story, like Caroline and her sister were talking about, it's almost like a Netflix documentary where two episodes in you find out that there's been a murder, and then you're like, what? This goes way deeper than I thought it did. But so another major person in this story was a US Democratic Party worker. He was called Seth Rich. So can you just tell us a little bit more about what happened to him and then how it plays into this story?
Yes, of course. This is one of the most disturbing aspects of the story, and very for the family of Seth Rich, a complete and utter nightmare. Seth Rich was worked for the Democratic Party, and very tragically, in July 2016, he was attacked and shot near his home in Washington, and was tragically killed while trying to fight off what looks like a mugging or a botched robbery. And this death was very convenient for Trump supporters and far-right groups and even the Russian government, who wanted to pursue the line, pursue the conspiracy theory that the Russians never hacked the DNC, and that, in fact, it was done by an insider, someone who worked in the DNC and had access to the DNC's computer systems. So conspiracy theories emerged, blaming Seth Rich for leaking the DNC emails after his death. Well, of course, he couldn't rebut them. Very, very convenient to blame a dead man for leaking the emails. And according to the conspiracy theory, which then developed, he was killed in retribution for leaking those documents. And then those conspiracy theories just multiplied on the internet. They flooded the internet and social media, and were pushed by Trump supporters and Russian propagandists. And they went on for 2 years.
It's horrific, isn't it?
Really, it's horrific. Yeah, I mean, for the family, it's horrific. The members of the family were accused of taking money to provide the documents to WikiLeaks. And according to the court documents, there were death threats and, quotes, vicious online harassment made against the family.
Mm. Yeah, there was a huge trial surrounding this, wasn't there? Because Seth's brother, Aaron, spoke out and said that neither he nor Seth were involved in this in any way. And it led to a huge trial, didn't it? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, the family took legal action against those people who've been propagating the lies about Seth Rich. And the conspiracy theories were picked up by, you know, what you might regard as respectable outlets. So they were broadcast by Fox News. And Fox News had to quickly apologise, and the Washington Times had to retract a story So the family sued and essentially brought legal action against the people who were pushing these conspiracy theories, against the main people who were pushing them. And that's been going on for some time. And the case was finally settled just this month. And according to lawyers who've produced videos on the internet, they've received millions of pounds worth of damages. And the apologies are out there for you to read. You know, the people promoting these theories admit that they were baseless. There were no grounds to make them. There was nothing in them. And they've apologised. Settlements have been reached. And the Rich family has been given sort of millions in compensation. Whether that's enough to compensate for 2 years of what must be a very horrific time, I do not know.
Yeah, so it turned out to be an extremely tragic but unrelated death?
There's no evidence anywhere that I've seen or I believe exists to suggest he had anything to do with leaking the DNC documents. That whole thing was a very convenient fabrication. The Rich family sort of reached a final settlement just a couple of weeks ago that brought all of the lies about Seth Rich and his alleged involvement in leaking the DNC documents to a complete end. And the final apologies came from a guy who called Edward Butowski, who's a wealthy Texas fund manager, and another guy called Matt Couch, who's, for want of a better word, right-wing activist. And they both apologised unreservedly for publishing lies and untruths about the Rich family. And they admitted that they had no basis for accusing Seth Rich of anything. And according to their lawyers, the Rich family has now received millions of dollars in compensation for death threats and vicious online harassment, which... that's a quote from the court documents, which followed the propagation of conspiracy theories.
So, Bill, how does Tim Leonard connect to these guys in the US?
So people in America, you know, were pushing out the conspiracy theory that Seth Rich, rather than the Russians, were responsible for hacking into the DNC. And there's a timeline that we go through in our story that explains how Tim Leonard became connected into this. It's slightly complicated. So Tim Leonard was pushing out his own theories about Seth Rich independently. They were carefully worded with the, you know, appropriate denials and get-out clauses. And he was in touch with an anonymous source that also used a pseudonym called Forensicator, who fed him files containing metadata from the hacked DNC files that were leaked to WikiLeaks. So Forensicator, whoever Forensicator was, had carried out a forensic analysis of all the files uploaded to WikiLeaks. That required a lot of resources and technical expertise to do. And he chose, or she chose, or they chose, or it chose, whatever Forensicator is, to leak them or to give them to Tim Leonard. Now, the metadata in those files, according to the analysis by Forensicator, had been manipulated to show that the hacked documents could only have been stolen by a Democratic National Committee employee, i.e. according to the Forensicator forensic analysis, it had to be an insider job. The Russians couldn't have done it. And they claimed to show that the DNC documents were copied to a computer located in the east coast of the USA. Now, if that was true, it was devastating for the US intelligence services who'd already blamed the Russians, because it showed that the Russians couldn't possibly have done it. So Tim Leonard, under the name Adam Carter, published a rewritten version of this forensic evidence a few weeks later, and it started to attract people's attention. very successfully so. And the information ended up going straight to the, well, straight to the White House. When I say straight to the White House, it's like a Netflix series. Nothing is quite as straight as it seems. So it attracted the interests of former intelligence professionals in the US. So there's a group called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, also known as VIPS. So that's made up of people like Bill Binney, who's a former whistleblower from the US National Security Agency. And he's been featured in Computer Weekly. Amazingly principled person who was treated appallingly by the NSA for telling the truth. If you like, he was a precursor of Edward Snowden, but he's also a very prominent supporter of Trump and will not say a bad word against him. That's his political view, which we have to respect. So Binney and a former CIA intelligence officer called Ray McGovern published a report based on Tim Leonard stroke Adam Carter's evidence from the Forensicator. And their report proved, or was said to, proved that the hacking could not be the work of the Russians. And it attracted a lot of publicity, you know, because these were former intelligence professionals. They have a lot of credibility. So it led to an article being published in the left-wing newspaper, The Nation, and then further articles in Breitbart News and on Fox News. And what happens next is Trump appears to have seen it on TV or, you know, read it in one of the publications and asked the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, to interview Bill Binney and to speak to him and find out what support there was for the theory that the Russians did not hack the DNC. And in fact, it was an outsider job. So that's how sort of Tim Leonard, as Adam Carter, and his information ended up going all the way to the White House. That was our story back in 2018. Disinformation is not about telling big lies. It's all about distraction and confusion. So it's about publishing articles that do contain facts, but are often not relevant or distractions, and then building an argument, building an argument around them. So there is truth buried in there, and it's about building a whole suggestion of a whole edifice of suggestion in a process called gaslighting. Now, Tim Leonard would probably deny that he spreads disinformation. And what we do know is in 2017, we found a whole series of guides that Tim Leonard had posted on his website in order to, he says, alert people to disinformation and how to detect it. And they had things like, titles like The Weaponization of Social Media, Classical Deception Techniques and Perception Management, and Deception in a Digital Age. There was a whole bunch of papers that we assume, you know, Tim Leonard might have studied and become expert on.
So, Bill, we're all interested in how Tim Leonard worked and what's his modus operandi.
We studied what Tim Leonard has said on Twitter and on his websites and in his articles, and Duncan has spent many hours reading many thousands of words that Tim Leonard has published. So Tim Leonard never comes right out and says something directly. That's his modus operandi. So he tends to put forward the question, you know, ideas and possibilities that other people pick up on and run with and take to the next level. So they turn the possibilities and the ideas into facts and conspiracy theories. So a typical example earlier on is a tweet that says this: what if Guccifer 2 is not Russian, not even a hacker? but still had access to the DCC, brackets the Democratic Campaign, documents. So he's just raising a question. You know, he's not saying that the Russians didn't do it. He's just questioning, what if they didn't do it? You know, what if it was someone else who wasn't even a hacker? What if it was someone who had access to the Democratic Campaign documents? So that's how it works. It's all through suggestion. So you put forward a conspiracy theory, but always with deniability to say that he didn't actually say that. You know, it was just a theory. He was just asking a question. Then others would pick up on it and amplify it, and it would move like a game of China's whispers. It would move from a question into established fact.
That's so interesting. Such an interesting approach.
Yeah, it is. And he didn't do it right all the time. He made mistakes. So, you know, on one occasion, he posted to Reddit quite early on under a false identity called Defiant, which was another one of his pseudonyms. And he just came out right out and said it. To be clear, I believe Seth Rich was the source of the DNC leaks. I think that was a slip up. It wasn't caveated. It wasn't put forward as a question. About 5 months before the US election in 2016, the Democrats detected that they'd been hacked, that the DNC had been hacked. And this was at the time when Donald Trump at that time was looking as though he might lose against Hillary Clinton. Now the hackers, whoever they were, used spear phishing attacks to break into the email accounts of very senior people in the Democratic Party, including Hillary Clinton's campaign team. And you probably remember news coverage of the time. They got the email accounts of John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. And some of the emails were very damaging to the Clinton campaign, and not just because of the contents, but they actually led to four top Clinton officials resigning, and that caused great disarray for Hillary Clinton's election campaign. So shortly after the hacks, two new fake characters appeared on the internet. One of them was called DC Leaks, and DC Leaks appeared on the internet publishing the hacked documents from the DNC and communicated privately with a few selected favorite journalists and offering them advance access to the documents. DC Leaks also got in touch with WikiLeaks, because WikiLeaks had previously published a whole cache of emails from Hillary Clinton that they'd obtained from Freedom of Information. So publicly available, just use Freedom of Information to get it. So now DC Leaks, this fake internet entity, offers new leaked material about Hillary Clinton to WikiLeaks. So by this time, people were asking questions. Who was DC Leaks and who was behind it? And people were reaching the conclusion that it was actually a front for the Russians' intelligence service, the GRU. So to deal with that, another fake character appeared to counteract that idea. And this fake character was, according to all the evidence, was cobbled together really quickly. And this fake character was called Guccifer 2. And Guccifer 2 claimed to be the real hacker that hacked into the Democrats. It wasn't Russia, it was Guccifer 2, and he claimed to be a lone hacker operating from Romania. So sometime later, the Mueller report concluded that actually Guccifer 2 was actually a front for the Russian intelligence services, as was DC Leaks. And they issued an indictment that actually named the two Russian intelligence officers behind Guccifer 2 and gave their addresses, their work addresses. Okay. Now you could argue, if you want to, that Mueller was partisan. That's a conspiracy argument against Mueller. However, the findings of Russian involvement were backed up by the Senate Intelligence Committee, and that's controlled. It has a Republican majority. So a majority of Trump supporters on that committee, and they released a 1,000-page report explaining great detail how the Russians actually did it, how they got inside the DNC servers. And it goes into great detail about how they use Bitcoins to anonymously pay for web hosting and servers, and how they Googled English phrases that were subsequently used by Guccifer II. Now, you know, of course, if you live in the Flat Earth conspiracy universe, then both of these reports, the Mueller report and the Senate Intelligence Committee reports, are fabrications by the FBI to cover up the fact that the hackers were insiders rather than Russians. And there are many people who believe that. But the reports are so detailed and contain so much evidence of what the Russians did and how they did it, that it's clearly based on electronic intelligence, information gathered by the US National Security Agency. I think it's fantasy to suggest that they were fabricated as part of some sort of cover-up. But many people believe it is. They were.
And there's a link to that report in Duncan's story.
There is, yes.
I wish to explore that 1,000 pages of text. Bill, there seem to be a couple of other British people who seem to be involved in the miasma of this story, who are mentioned in Duncan's article. Maybe say a brief word about them.
Yes, we mentioned a couple of other Brits who've been pushing out information about the Russian involvement or denials of the Russian involvement in the DNC hacking. So it's astonishing that so many Brits are involved in this, and there are probably others that we don't know about, haven't included in the story, that might over time emerge. Yeah, the other Brits include David Jonathan Blake, and he had a blog site that was called Loaded for Guccifer. So, you know, Guccifer, the alleged Romanian lone hacker that stole the DNC emails, and not the Russians. So what we know about Blake, according to his own Twitter account, is that, you know, he likes beer, he likes wine, claims to own a vineyard, and he started in 2017, he started tweeting out tweets that supported the Russian government agenda of the day on topics like Syria, Crimea, Ukraine, and the attacks, chemical attacks in Salisbury. And Blake and Leonard had conversations on Twitter talking about Russian issues and the Salisbury nerve gases. And Blake also published on his website intricate and complex and forensic analyses raising questions about Guccifer II, and use that information to try and attack and undermine the Mueller report. And it's interesting, as Blake says, he's publishing forensic analyses, but he says he's never had formal computer training, that he taught himself Linux and advanced file format systems forensics during the winter evenings on a small Burgundy vineyard. Again, you know, he worked with Leonard on material created by this fake account called Forensicate, and he's actually written a book called Loaded for Guccifer, which is available at all good online retailers. I've never read it, but no one seems to bother to review it in any publication. There was another guy in Shilling who people thought was a fake Russian troll, actually thought was a real Russian troll because of his pro-Russian tweets, which were prolific. And he used a picture of a supermodel called David Gandy as his photograph. And he actually outed himself. So he came out on Sky TV and you know, he was, you know, just a genuine, not a Russian, just a real guy with, you know, very odd pro-Russian views. So nothing is as it seems in this world of smoke and mirrors.
And Bill, is this it for the story? Are we likely to see any follow-ups or...?
Certainly it's done and dusted, I think, as far as the Seth Rich conspiracy theory is concerned. People have apologised for that. They've admitted there was no basis in truth for that. The Seth Rich family and his parents and brother have received compensation for 2 years of distress that was baseless. I think the one good thing that has come out of all of this is that the family has been vindicated. So I think we can draw a line under that. Whether we can draw a line under conspiracy theories and more Russian disinformation, that's a different question.
That's probably a good point for us to stop today. It's a very, very long, complex story. As well worth the read, listeners, and thank you very much, Bill, for explaining all that to us. We will, as usual, provide a link to that story in the summary article that goes with the podcast on the website, which you can read on computerweekly.com. But you can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and listen to us on Amazon Music. I think that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks again, Bill, for that. Hugely appreciated. And it just remains for me to say, as usual and as ever, thank you very much to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you very much to you, listener, for listening. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.